Welcome to Citizens Climate Radio. In this show, we highlight people's stories. We celebrate your successes, and together we share strategies for talking about climate change. I'm your host, Peter Santoscano. Welcome to episode 57 of Citizens Climate Radio, a project of Citizens Climate Education. This episode is airing on Friday, February 26, 2021. Citizens Climate Education encourages bipartisan support for climate solutions. While people on the left, right, and in the middle might disagree on many issues, climate change is one that can bring us together. But this is not always easy to do. It requires listening to others who hold views on issues and policies that differ from our own. I might even find myself offended by a fellow climate advocate's political outlook on a range of issues. How then can I learn to listen to someone from a different political party so we can work together? How do I identify shared values and common ground? In today's show, I'll give you some practice in listening. We will hear from the political left and the right. On the left, you will hear from folk singers and song leaders Annie Patterson and Peter Blood. They're liberal Quakers in New England and appear in our Art House feature. Annie and Peter will share songs that motivate and inspire climate advocates. Some are protest songs, and some are beautiful ballads. They talk about the role of music in social movements, and then offer up their own tiny desk concert. But first, on the right, from the American South, we hear from a committed Republican who has dedicated this part of his career to get his party on board, to take climate change seriously. This former member of Congress signed up for a big job.
I'm collecting up a community of conservatives who care about climate change, traveling the country virtually now, used to travel the country actually, to find conservatives who care about climate change and to encourage those who aren't quite sure yet that this is a cause for them and that they have a solution that fits with their values.
That's Republican Bob Inglis, former congressman from the state of South Carolina. Bob is the executive director of Republic Ian. He and his group believe in the power of American free enterprise and innovation to solve climate change. In a moment, he will share some of his journey of how he got into climate work. He'll also talk about lessons he's learned in reaching out to fellow conservatives. But first, I asked Bob about the recent political unrest in the USA, and in particular, the January 6th storming of the US Capitol by supporters of President Donald Trump.
You know, seeing the rioters storm the Capitol was really quite traumatic, I gotta say. Especially since I've held in such reverence those sacred spaces that they were trashing. Whenever I've walked onto the House floor, there's been just sort of a moment of awareness that the only people that get to walk here are people who've been elected by the people of their district. That's the only way you can get to the House of Representatives. In the Senate, you can get appointed by the governor if there's a vacancy. But in the House, there's only one way to get there, and that is to get elected by the people you represent. So there's a sacredness to the floor and to that space where you realize you're representing, as a duly elected person, the people of your district. And to see the rioters, the thugs, the hooligans going on the floor of the Senate and the House, breaking into the place, trashing it. Gee, it was really quite traumatic for me as a former member of Congress.
Bob's conservative Christian faith has shaped his worldview and his politics. During much of his time in Congress, like many conservative Christians, he was skeptical of climate change. And then something changed. Bob's faith, values, and his family, along with a series of personal experiences, reshaped the way he viewed the issue. he now feels an urgent need to enact solutions to address greenhouse gas pollution. I asked Representative Bob Inglis about his faith, his climate conversion, and how his pro-life stance connects to creation care.
I grew up in the Episcopal Church, came to understand Christianity as a relationship, not a religion, in college. Then spent a long time in the Presbyterian Church in America, which is a very conservative Presbyterian church denomination, and then returned to the Episcopal Church. In some of the Presbyterian churches of America that I was a part of, there'd probably be a real quizzical look on some people's faces, like, "You're doing what, Bob?" But not so much in my church now. They're very much very supportive. My metamorphosis, you know, is first my son asking me to look again at environmental policy when I was running for Congress the second go around. Second step was going to Antarctica with the Science Committee. Third step was a spiritual awakening, Great Barrier Reef, with an Aussie climate scientist who's now become a very dear friend, who inspired me by the conservation changes he was making in his life in order to love God and love people. That's a good cause for respecting life, is to see it as God's handiwork and to love people by protecting the vulnerable. Surely that's the case in climate, is that we're about this effort to protect people who would otherwise bear the brunt of this. To whom much is given, much will be required. And so we have this opportunity as those who have a great deal, a lot, to care for the least of these, the people who are going to bear the brunt of it, the people who are picking our produce, the people who are living in places that are close to sea level, the people that are going to deal with those tropical diseases as they spread. All those things, so it becomes an opportunity for us to really care for others.
Whenever I speak with American conservatives who are pursuing solutions to climate change, I point out how the left has taken the lead on the climate movement. Much of the message is from the left, and proposals like the Green New Deal come from the left as well. I asked Bob about what he would like to see different in the climate change movement. And what about those on the left who are doubtful or suspicious of Republicans promoting climate solutions?
Yeah, you know, I might change that a little bit by saying it's not that we want to change the fact that the left has been involved in climate. That's great. We need more people from the left involved. But we really need to add people from the right, and we need people from the left to accept those folks that we bring to the conversation, to let them join in. People have been gracious to me, extended grace to me, because I, you know, was 6 years in Congress saying it's nonsense. After being out 6 years of practicing commercial real estate law, came back to Congress with a different affect, and I was accepted, have been accepted by many who could have shunned me for those 6 years of being on the wrong side of this. People of the left, please show grace to those that we're going to add to the conversation. What's been lacking is conservatives who have just not been at the table coming forward with those practical, sensible solutions that could work. In the case of CCL and a price on carbon dioxide, there what you see is an eminently sensible solution that is embraced on the left and on the right. That's what's exciting about this, is the opportunity right there to bring America together and lead the world to a solution.
Bob's organization, Republic Ian, is promoting actions that will mitigate climate change through decarbonizing the economy, policies enacted that will create jobs and wealth for Americans. With climate change, though, impacts are already interrupting communities and the economy. We also need to adapt to sea level rise and other impacts.
Even this morning in the Greenville, South Carolina newspaper, there's a story about Charleston, South Carolina, looking at a seawall. That story really helps us in the climate mitigation department. Here it was clearly climate adaptation, as we're going to build a higher seawall around Charleston. But it helps us with talking about policies to mitigate climate change, to head off climate change as well, because it focuses the mind. You mean we have to have a wall to protect Charleston? How high the wall got to be? Well, it's got to be pretty high. Oh, wow. Well, that focuses the mind on, you know, why don't we see what we can do to make it so we don't need it quite that high? You know, we'd like to keep a view here.
Bob Inglis has gained insights about the resistance we climate advocates sometimes face.
When we come up with somebody who's really hard over against climate action, the thing that I find hard to do, but I've got to remind myself to do it, is to just be aware that they're probably afraid of something. They're afraid of a change in their life. They're afraid that they're going to be called the laggard, the last one to get it, the dumb kid in the class. What we've got to do is work overtime to address that fear and to listen to it. I'm now preaching better than I can do. You know, most of the time I want to talk rather than listen, as probably most of us do. But if I can persuade myself to just listen a little bit, like in that Tanger Island experience, to hear what it is that those residents are afraid of on that island. The island's going under. If I were there and I were facing the end of my life as I know it, in other words, my way of life, of crabbing for a living in this beautiful place with generations behind me, people knowing each other in this very tight community, and realizing this all going to go underwater, I might be inclined to deny it as well, because the acceptance of it would be too terrible. Try to walk a mile in their shoes and figure out why it is that they're rejecting the information. And then also give them just time to come around and realize, hey, you know what? We're literally all in this together. Yeah, your island's going to go first, but a place that I value very much, the coast of South Carolina, and my home county, is the number one county at risk in the whole of the United States, says a recent study based on financial impacts and other impacts, health impacts. And so we're all in this together. So let's see if we can figure some way forward, but mostly just try to listen and understand them and not come off as the people who have it all figured out.
Last month, we featured the progressive evangelical Christian speaker and author Tony Campolo. And speaking about creation care, Campolo believes we will only take climate change seriously when humans, especially men in power, see the Earth and its resources in a different way. Instead of domination and extraction, political and business leaders need to develop and act as protectors of the Earth. I asked Representative Inglis about Reverend Campolo's teaching. It turns out Bob knows of Reverend Campolo's work and admires a famous sermon Tony preached.
I especially love his famous sermon that has the constant refrain, "It's Friday, Sunday's a-coming." Look it up. It's really powerful. Yeah, you're raising the question about dominion theology, you know, and this is something that probably some in the CCL community have encountered, is people who say, you know, God gave us dominion over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air, and that is exactly the word that is used in Genesis chapter 1. But what I like to point out to people is, yeah, and what does that dominion look like? If you look, for example, at Jesus, well, let's see, he's washing the disciples' feet on that Good Friday, Sunday's a-coming. That's the job of the lowest slave in the house. He says, you must be the servant of all. He broke all kinds of these maybe hyper-masculine codes of not speaking to women in public, for example. He talked to the Samaritan woman at noon at the well. So here he is breaking all those things and being quite the nurturer. Tony Campolo is clearly onto something. My point, again, to anybody who asserts dominion theology is, yeah, what does that dominion look like? Apparently it looks like servanthood. It doesn't look like rip it up, tear it up, use it up. It looks more like care for it, nurture it, foster it. That's what it looks like.
Before we ended our conversation, I asked Bob if he had anything he wanted to add.
You know, there are various environmental groups who think that everybody loves them just the way they are. They don't see any need to add anything to what they're doing. They just want a little bit more of the same. But CCL is this marvelously self-aware organization that knows that it needs to reach to the right. And I'm so grateful for Jim Tolbert and others who are helping to do that. That's really unique. And the ability of CCLers to reach out to conservative members of Congress is unique. I just offer that as an encouragement to keep it up. We're going to win this if we just continue with the DNA that my friend Marshall Saunders so beautifully placed in CCL.
Bob Inglis is the executive director of Republic Ian, an organization offering conservative answers to climate change. Learn more at republicen.org. That's republicen.org. They also produce their own podcast called Eco Rights Speaks Podcast. You can find Eco Rights Speaks wherever you get your podcast. I'll also have links in our show notes. Special thanks to RepublicEN's Communications Director, Price Atkinson, for setting up my interview with Bob. Now it is time for The Art House. Joining us in The Art House are folk singers and song leaders Annie Patterson and Peter Blood. They are the creators of the Rise Up Singing and Rise Again songbooks. Peace-loving, anti-war, environmental Quakers in the USA, they sing protest songs and folk ballads. Their songbooks take on social issues like racism, poverty, inequity, and sexism. Pete Seeger, a folk singer and social activist, served as a lifelong guide to Annie and Peter. From Seeger, and just getting out into the public leading singing, they learned how to determine the kinds of songs to sing at events.
Music is one of the most powerful ways that you can help a movement move forward. A melody goes into your brain in a different way. When you feel the tones, the melody, the chord progression, you're absorbing information in a whole different kind of way. You're not just absorbing the information that's in the lyrics.
Music plays several different key roles in social movements. One is that it helps people to change the way they look at themselves and their relationships to other people. Daniel Bjergen told Pete Seeger that one of the reasons he decided to do the Pentagon Papers was because he had gone to one of Pete's concerts, and hearing his voice and hearing people sing together reached a part of himself where he couldn't keep doing what he was doing. A second reason is that music allows people to connect with each other. There's been research about this, that people feel more engaged with a community, with a group, when they're singing together. So that creates solidarity that's critical for people's ability to carry on successful struggle. And finally, I think it allows people to feel a sense of hope and strength to keep it on, even when a movement is being severely repressed by the powers that be.
And what about climate change? What songs are out there that speak to people or motivate them to act?
You go on YouTube and you type in climate change folk songs. A lot of times you're not going to get to the really, really good ones. I think you're going to get songs that were written for kids to sing in little school choirs. And a lot of those songs, in my humble opinion, they don't hold any water, so to speak, because they're just overly simplified, a very complex issue. And we understand that some people might not get this. Climate change and racial justice are intertwined. They're absolutely intertwined in a complex way. It's not hard to understand. It's just a song needs to help evoke the fact that you're speaking about an emotional level and an injustice level for people that live on the planet, for all the beings on the planet, for indigenous people. All of those things come to play.
Annie and Peter agree to share samples of songs they sing with connections to climate change. They began with protest songs and others that get people on their feet. Annie Patterson and Peter Blood will point us to songs and singers they love, and they're always faithful to describe each song as they name the song's creators.
Well, this song, One Foot, Lead with Love by Melanie Demore, It's such a great song when you are out with other people, but it's also a great song to just listen to. And it goes like this. Let's see, I might move this down here. We can get my drum a little bit. You gotta put one foot in front of the other and lead with love. You gotta put one foot in front of the other and lead with love. You gotta put one foot in front of the other and lead with love. You gotta put one foot in front of the other and lead with love. Don't give up hope.
Don't give up hope.
You're not alone.
You're not alone.
Don't you give up.
Don't you give up.
Keep moving on. Well, you gotta put one foot in front of the other and lead with love. You gotta put one foot in front of the other and lead with love. Well, I recently got to tour with a duo called Emma's Revolution. It's Pat Humphreys and Sandy O. And we sang this song. I got to sing it with them. It's a song they wrote, Our House is on Fire.
Put out the fire, put out the fire, put out the fire, our house is on fire. Put out the fire, put out the fire, put out the fire, our house is on fire.
We love you.
Peter found a song that has spoken deeply to audiences about climate change.
This song was written by Rabbi Shoshana Friedman, who's another climate activist in the Boston area. And Annie later recorded it. And Shoshana was so thrilled. She said, finally, somebody recorded it in a way that it did justice what I wanted to do with the song.
It's a really amazing song. The tide is rising, and so are we.
The tide is rising, and so are we. The tide is rising, and so are we. The tide is rising, and so are we. This is where we are called to be. This is where we are called to be. The task is mighty, and so are we. The task is mighty, and so are we. The task is mighty, and so are we. This is where we are called to be. This is where we are called to be. This land is holy, and so are we. This land is holy, and so are we. This land is holy, and so are we. This is where we are called to be. This is where we are called to be. The storm is raging, and so are we. The storm is raging. so are we. Storm is raging, and so are we. This is where we are called to be. This is where we are called to be. The sun is shining, and so are we. The sun is shining, and so are we. The sun is shining, and so are we. This is where we are called to be. This is where we are called to be. The world is ready, and so are we. The world is ready, and so are we. The world is ready, and so are we. This is where we are called to be. This is where we are called to be. This is where we are called to be.
Annie Patterson and Peter Blood are the creators of the Rise Up Singing and Rise Again songbooks. They have links to their songbooks, recordings, and lists of thousands of songs to sing alone or in groups. Visit riseupandsing.org. That's riseupandsing.org. If you have an idea for the Art House, feel free to contact me, radio@citizensclimate.org. Before we close, I have some good news for you. I've partnered with the folks at Yale Climate Connections to share with us good news. They produce a 90-second daily show that appears on radio stations all over the United States.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lazarus, and this is Climate Connections. For more than 80 years, a coal-fired power plant operated in the city of Hammond, Indiana. But when the state line generating plant shut down in 2012, the city lost its biggest taxpayer.
So that was a big deal when it decided to close.
Dave Ryan is executive director of the Lakeshore Chamber of Commerce in Hammond. He says the closure also left behind a giant building that had to be taken down and a massive pile of coal.
It's just sitting there, 100 feet high and 100 feet deep in a hole. So that all had to be remediated.
But the city was convinced that the site had potential. It's close to Chicago and located on Lake Michigan. Developers agreed and used the site to build a new data center called Digital Crossroad. To build the facility, they recycled some asphalt and concrete from the original plant. Solar panels will help create electricity. For the city of Hammond, the data center helps provide a new tax base.
What was going to be just a environmentally disastrous site, you know, with a huge coal pile sitting in the middle of it, has now been turned into a beautiful data center. And now what was a basket of lemons is now lemonade for the city of Hammond.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
Many thanks to Dr. Anthony Lazarowicz, Sarah Peach, and the other folks at Yale Climate Connections who have provided us with today's good news. If you want to share good news with us, just email me, radio@citizensclimate.org. That's radio@citizensclimate.org. We've come to the end of our program where we've tried and hopefully succeeded in listening to people from different political backgrounds. If you like what you hear and you want to support the work we do, visit citizensclimateeducation.org to learn how you can make a tax-deductible contribution. The show is written and produced by me, Peter Santoscano, other technical support from Ricky Bradley and Brett Cease, social media assistance from Ashley Hunt Motorano, Flannery Winchester, and Steve Volk, moral support from Madeline Para. If you'd like to comment on today's show or share your thoughts, please email me, radio@citizensclimate.org. That's radio@citizensclimate.org. When you have the opportunity, please share our show with your friends. You can find Citizens Climate Radio wherever you listen to podcasts. You can follow us on Twitter @CitizensCRadio. That's Citizens, the letter C, Radio, @CitizensCRadio. And feel free to tweet at me directly @P2Sun, the letter P, the number 2, S-O-N. Visit citizensclimatelobby.org/blog to see info about our puzzler and find links to our guests. Citizens Climate Radio is a project of Citizens Climate Education.